Well, good morning, church. If you were to go into my garage and my house in Redwood on any day, in any season, at any point in the year, you would not find my car. In actual fact, I have lived in my bachelorette pad for over 5 years now, and never, ever has my beloved 1997 Nissan Primera been inside the garage. Now, there are a number of reasons for this, church. There are a number of reasons. The driveway's tight, it's not an electronic door, but the main reason, the main hindrance, is that there simply is not enough room in my garage for my 1997 Nissan Primera. In my garage, I have shelves of kitchen appliances and things that don't fit in the kitchen. I got double glazing 18 months ago, and my sentimental environmental heart just couldn't bear the idea of my beautiful old wooden framing going into the landfill. And so I decided that I would also put that into the garage. And so there's a pile of old wooden framing on my garage floor, and one of my friend's dads comes and takes it whenever he's got a specific project that he's working on in his garden. But in addition to the kitchen things and the pile of wooden framing, there is also a dining room table and 6 chairs in my garage. And this dining room table is the one that I grew up eating dinner around. When Mum and Dad were thinking of getting rid of it, my sentimental soul just couldn't bear the idea of that and couldn't part with it. And so into my garage it went. And while it doesn't fit in my current home, one day when I eventually move out, there is going to be room for that dining room table. And it's my dream that there will be many more meals of fellowship and fun around it. Now, some of you may be like me, and you have enjoyed many memorable meals of fellowship with friends and family around a table. And it is also an item that is meaningful and significant to you. And it turns out that for the elders, the table also happens to be the symbol of what we believe God is calling us to focus in on as a church in 2024. See, there isn't just a table in my garage or in my future dream home, in your current homes, or in our memories. But they also feature numerous times in Bible passages, and many memorable moments that define history actually happen around a table in the Bible. And so this morning, it is my privilege on behalf of the eldership to take us through just one passage where a table is at the center, to lead us in dwelling on the significance of this passage and to briefly use it to highlight the three focus areas of St. Albans Baptist Church for 2024. Does that sound all right? Good-o. So if you have your Bibles with you, either in hard copy form, phone form, delivered by a bird form, whatever form you have it in, please join me in 2 Samuel chapter 9, which reads, "And David said, 'Is there anyone left of the house of Saul, that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake?' Now there was a servant of the house of Saul whose name was Ziba. And they called him to David, and the king said to him, 'Are you Ziba?' And he said, 'I am your servant.' And the king said, 'Is there not still someone of the house of Saul that I may show kindness of God to him?' And Ziba said to the king, 'There is still a son of Jonathan. He is crippled in his feet.' And the king said to him, 'Where is he?' And Ziba said to the king, 'He is in the house of Makkah, the son of Amiel, at Lodibar.' So then King David sent and brought him from the house of Makkah, the son of Amiel, at Lodibar. And Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and paid homage. And David said, "Mephibosheth." And he answered, "Behold, I am your servant." And David said to him, "Do not fear, for I will show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan, and I will restore to you all the land of Saul, your father, and you will eat at my table always." And he paid homage and said, "What is your servant that you should show regard for a dead dog such as I?" Then the king called Ziba, Saul's servant, and said to him, "All that belonged to Saul and to all his house I have given to your master's grandson. And you and your sons and your servants shall till the land for him and shall bring in the produce that your master's grandson may have bread to eat. But Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, shall always eat at my table." Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. And then Ziba said to the king, "According to all that my lord the king commands his servant, so your servant will do." So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. And Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah. And all who lived in Ziba's house became Mephibosheth's servants. So Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, for he ate always at the king's table. Now he was lame in both of his feet. So some context this morning, church. While this passage finishes with a crippled man eating at the table of the king for the rest of his days, this story actually begins decades earlier with two friends making a promise to each other in a field. In 1 Samuel 20, Jonathan, the son of King Saul, has just seen his father's resolve to kill his friend David. And Jonathan knows that David is who God has appointed to be the next king of Israel. And so having seen his father and determination to kill him, Jonathan meets David in a field at a predetermined time and signals to him to run for his life. And these two are best friends. The Bible says that their souls were knitted together and that Jonathan loved David as much as his own soul. And they had previously made a covenant with one another. And a covenant, or a cut as it was known back then, was a binding promise between two parties that was often sealed in blood. So after spending some time together on this day, Jonathan says, "Go in peace, because we have sworn, both of us, in the name of the Lord, saying to the Lord that he shall be between me and you and between my offspring and your offspring forever." These two friends from two different families have promised to look after one another and their offspring despite all that is going on. And so when Saul and Jonathan die in battle, and the news of David's ascension to be the king of Israel spreads, a nurse enters our story. Now, it is absolutely vital to understand that the custom and the norm of the time was that when a new king from a new lineage came to the throne, they would execute and kill everybody from the former king's dynasty to make sure that there was no chance of a challenge. So with Jonathan's two brothers also dying in battle, 5-year-old Mephibosheth is an heir to Saul's dynasty and thus will likely incur the punishment extended to those who from previous dynasties, essentially. And David does actually give some of Saul's descendants to the Gibeonites to be hung. So no doubt knowing this, and the judgment that Mephibosheth was about to incur and the death that he was facing, the nurse takes Mephibosheth and flees. And in their haste, Mephibosheth falls and his injuries cause permanent disability to his feet. And we know through our passage this morning that Mephibosheth ends up living in a place called Lodibar. Probably not said like that, but that's just how my brain says it. And Lodibar literally translates to mean pastureless, wilderness, and even nothing. The grandson of this former king, Mephibosheth, has gone from a palace to a land of nothing. And as a disabled person, he would have been at the mercy of the support of others to survive and to get by. There's no disability benefit. The roads and the homes and the infrastructure aren't built with disabilities in mind. And so this crippled boy is vulnerable. And he finds support in the name of a man called Maka, and he grows up hiding in this land of nothing, keeping a very low profile, possibly afraid of the day that he would be discovered and consequently killed for who he was. Now, we don't know how long it has been since Mephibosheth has fled, but our passage this morning starts with King David asking a servant whether there was anyone from the line of Saul left. For whatever reason, his covenant with Jonathan has come to his mind. And his spirit has been stirred to take immediate action, to do something to honour his dead best friend. And Ziba tells David of Mephibosheth's existence and his location, and David sends for him. Now join me, church, and envisioning this from Mephibosheth's point of view, he'll likely remember having to flee his home in a palace as a five-year-old because this guy called David had become king. And he likely remembers having to travel in agony after falling and becoming lame to escape for his life. He's likely been told all through his childhood that if King David discovers him, he will be killed as per the custom, and he's lived as a disabled man struggling in this land of nothing, just trying to get by. And then a messenger of King David appears on the horizon. And at that moment, Mephibosheth probably thought, this is it, I'm going to die. They've found me. And he endures a journey from his wilderness back to his home city, filled likely with fear and with worry, anticipating death. And the day dawns and he is brought before David. And our passage this morning says that Mephibosheth fell on his face before King David. But instead of the sword that he's been fearing his whole life, David says, Mephibosheth, do not fear. David knows that this guy in front of him is afraid out of his tree. But he says, don't be afraid, for I will show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan. I will restore to you all the land of Saul your father, and you shall eat at my table always. And Mephibosheth probably thought that some of the dust from the ground had gotten into his ears. King David, the enemy of his granddad, this guy that he's feared since he was five, is not killing him, but is instead offering to change his life and to look after him always. And Mephibosheth, no doubt in a state of disbelief, says, what is your servant that you should show regard for a dead dog such as I? He calls himself a dead dog. That, yet in fulfillment of the covenant promise made to Jonathan decades earlier, David shows a radical level of love and kindness. He simply reiterates his invitation to the king's table always, and to be treated like one of his sons. Mephibosheth's heritage as a grandson of Saul, his disability, does not hinder David from extending this invitation. And this position at the king's table would have procured Mephibosheth great honour from among people who would have seen him as someone who was great enough to secure themselves a lasting invite to dinner. A sermon I listened to described the scene this way. One night, Absalom, David's son, arrives at the dinner table. Now, Absalom's a bit of a character, gets up to a bit of mischief later in his life, Absalom, but one of the things that I find quite humorous about Absalom is that the Bible literally takes the time to describe how good-looking he is. It literally says in the Bible, and the Bible describes him as the most handsome man in Israel. There is not a single blemish, the Bible says, from the top of his head to the foot of his toes. This guy was like a stud. He was good-looking. Right? And the author thought that it was important to make sure that history knew that. Okay? You have David, right, who was also described as good looking. You have David's advisors, his inner circle, and they all prepare to sit and to eat at the king's table as usual. And then they hear the sound of someone else making their way to the dining room table. Goes the sound of the crutches, and into the room enters this crippled man, far from physically perfect, and from a previous dynasty, who then takes a seat and prepares to eat. Because of a covenant and the consequent invitation to this table, he has gone from a dead dog to now dining with and being treated like one of the king's sons. And it is inside of this scene of a crippled, broken man taking up his seat at the king's table that I want to briefly summarize again the three focus areas that the eldership believe God is calling us to walk in this year. And the first of these is that 2024 will be a year where we as a church will see more people being invited and coming to the king's table and having their lives transformed like Mephibosheth's. Now, authors today who write book series, they often strategically leave hints in their current books about what is to come in their future ones. Little moments where, when you read them for the first time, you blaze on past. But then if you reread the series and you know what happens at the ending, you see and you realize how these little moments are actually intentional echoes of what is to come in the future and how sophisticated the series and the author really are. The Seven Sisters books are like this. Who has read those? All the ladies put their hands up, yes. Harry Potter is also apparently like this. I never made it all the way through them, but good sources tell me that Harry Potter very much like this, seeds of what's going to happen in Harry's life all the way through. The Chronicles of Narnia are like this as well. And here in this book of the Bible, in 2 Samuel chapter 9, there is a hint of what is to come in the future of the book. An Old Testament arrow, big flashing neon sign that God has placed through the author in here for us to find. We are not to speed past it, but instead we are to realize that this scene of Mephibosheth being welcomed to the king's table is an echo of the gospel and the good news that we believe as Christians. Let's review our characters. King David represents our father, God the King. Jonathan is the Jesus figure, and where David and Jonathan make a covenant or a binding promise in blood to look after each other's family, God and Jesus establish a new covenant in blood to look after us and offer us the opportunity to join God's family. King David's covenant with Jonathan is what motivates him to not show judgment to Mephibosheth and not to put him to death. King David instead shows a radical love and grace and kindness to this guy, the self-proclaimed dead dog who himself has done nothing to deserve it. And similarly, our God is motivated to not show us the judgment that we deserve for all of our failings. But because of Jesus, our God, he shows us a radical love and grace and kindness, like Mephibosheth experiences. We, you, me, us all here, we are the Mephibosheth character. We've all been in the equivalent of our own wildernesses. Some of you may say that your life before meeting Jesus was like a wilderness. Whether you realize you were lost and needing help, or whether it was when you met Jesus that you discovered what you hadn't realized you were missing. Some of you may relate to the fact that Mephibosheth spent a lot of time hiding. And you may have been in seasons where you have likewise hid from things that you've done, or that you have perhaps been filled with shame. Some of you may be able to relate to being afraid and fear-filled about what will happen if people were to discover you. All of us have done things that make us undeserving of the King's unconditional and radical generosity, and yet we receive an invitation from the King. As David seeks out and searches for Mephibosheth, so our God seeks and searches out us. As David looks past Mephibosheth's disability and past, so our God looks past our past, all of our faults and stuff. As Mephibosheth is welcomed to a feast at David's table always like one of his sons, we are also invited to God's table to become heirs and saints and part of his family. Not because of who we are or anything that we have done, but because of who the King is and his love and his kindness and the binding promises that have been made on our account. As Mephibosheth's life was changed after a meeting with the King, so ours are when we meet God. And the story begins with a covenant in blood and ends with a broken person receiving bread to eat. An echo of the Passover meal much, and the meaning behind communion. And this is the good news and the gospel and how wonderful it is, church. You're looking a bit wonderful news. Amen. Those of us who have experienced God seeking us out in our wildernesses, who have encountered his love, who have taken up his invitation, and who now feast with him every day, know that it transforms your life. And church, we want more people to know about this King and about this transforming invitation. We want to be a church that shares this good news far and wide. There are so many people outside of these walls, in our families, in our friend groups, in our work settings, in this community, who have no idea that there is a King who is seeking them. Who don't know about God's radical love and his grace and his kindness and about how he wants to transform their lives. People who are in wildernesses of loneliness, people who are in wildernesses where they lack purpose and an understanding of what life is all about and why they're even here, people who are broken and hurting and hiding. And this year, our heart as a leadership is that this church will be a means by which God uses to be a messenger of the news that an invitation is waiting. That we will each partner with God and be sent out to those that he seeks. You know, church, there are many ways that a church can grow. Did you know that? One of them is babies. And we are all about the babies here at St. Albans Baptist Church. We love a baby dedication. And we are excited by the fact that there are more babies on the way. We also love it when people who are already dining at the king's table, who are already fellowshipping with the king, come and they join our church family here, whether it be because they are moving location, whether it be because they want to be closer to family, whether they want to see their babies growing up, whatever it is that motivates a change in where you're planted. We love people planting themselves here and growing in their walk with God through St. Albans Baptist Church. But on Elders Retreat last year, we dwelled on the fact that while we are growing as a church, and we give God all the praise and glory for that, we are not seeing new people meeting our King for the first time and discovering a seat at his table. And this is one of the core functions of the church. We want to see more baptisms throughout the year and more people expressing a desire to learn more about God and starting a relationship with him, not because numbers are important. Not because numbers are important, but because souls are. And there are seats prepared and invitations ready. And we have the good news to share. And our prayer is that 2024 will be a year where we see it shared with more people, with more passion, and with more freshness. Just as Absalom, the advisors, and the inner circle heard the of Mephibosheth's steps as he found his seat, may we also hear the of people coming down the aisle and finding their seat here. So that symbol is obviously represented by the bread and the communion here. But you may remember at the AGM that Mr. Caleb Rattray, he came to the stage with Whitaker's Chocolate. And I actually, admittedly, Lindor's was on special, so I bought Lindor's today. But there are some Lindor's chocolates here on the table, church. Yeah? Please feel free to come forth and have one if you would like. Setting an example always is Caleb. I was actually mightily impressed that no kids actually went for a leap during the worship time. I was waiting for it. But this yummy treat, is that all? Seriously, we're just going to have two? Okay, more for me, that's great. But this yummy treat isn't just to fill your tummies and your hearts. It was to help you to remember the second focus area for our year, and that is that 2024 would be a year where we would each intentionally move and go after more. A year where we would discover more at the King's table and position ourselves to receive more of his goodness, his grace, his unconditional love in other areas of our lives. At God's table, there is always more to discover. There is always more to learn and to receive and to enjoy because we serve a loving and a generous God. Now, it is worth noting that David displays a love and a generosity that is well beyond what was required under his covenant with Jonathan, according to theologians, who, as Matt so eloquently put it last week, do tend to disagree. But his promise to Jonathan required him to look after Mephibosheth. And technically, his invitation to eat at his table always didn't have to happen for that to be achieved. King David gives Mephibosheth land and servants to till the land for him so that him and his family have bread to eat. And this generosity was radical in its own right and would have ensured that Mephibosheth was comfortable and looked after for the rest of his days. He's been taken from a land dubbed as pastureless to being a landowner in Jerusalem and having servants work the land for him. But King David goes beyond this The extension of an invitation to his table always was not necessary, but was a demonstration of David's loyal love for his friend and his kindness. And the word kindness in this passage used to describe David's behavior is the Hebrew word hesed. And hesed encompasses so much, and its essence can't be captured with one word. Good on you, Denise. Across different translations, it can be described as steadfast love, as goodness, as loving kindness, as faithfulness and love. And just as David demonstrates hesed, an abundant love that goes far and beyond, so does our God demonstrate that for us through the Bible. He is steadfast in love. He's always good. He's generous in displaying his love and kindness, faithfulness, and full of love for us. This is the God we serve, and our heart as a leadership is that this year we would each intentionally position ourselves to realize and see God's hesed even more in our lives. Whether you want to see God's abundant hesed flow into your marriage, and so you do a marriage course. When Caleb introduced this focus area at the AGM, he shared about how for him and Kat, they wanted 2024 to be a year where they intentionally wanted to grow even further in their parenting and in their marriage. They are eager to learn from others, and bless them, are even running a marriage course in May here to go through content with other couples at church. But they are already intentionally positioning themselves to grow and to receive in the areas that they want to grow in. Whether you want to see more of God's abundant hesed flow into your leadership and through your leadership, so you do a coaching course, or you finally get round to finding a mentor, or you read a series of recommended books, whether you want the reality of God's hesed to take root in your heart so that you can finally cast out the insecurity that has plagued you for years, or the fear out of your life that you may be sitting on, so you do that course at Elijah House and you go through a healing process, what is your Lindor chocolate equivalent? What do you want more of this year? Where do you want God's hesed to flow? What do you want to intentionally move towards having more of? And each of us should have areas in our lives where we want to grow. And it is our hope and prayer that 2024 will be a year where we each intentionally position ourselves to go after more revelation of hesed in these areas. May our hunger and our thirst for him never be satisfied. And may we continue to thirst for more of him. We don't want anyone here to finish the year in the same spiritual state they're in now. That is not what walking with Jesus is all about. And finally, our third focus area, represented by the purifying agent that is hand sanitizer, is that 2024 would be a year where we each establish ourselves in our calling to be set apart. In 2024, we will explore together as a body what it means to be set apart as God's holy and pure people, and how this calling impacts our lives. And we are beginning a sermon series on this in April. And as we think about our position at the King's table and the celebration of communion, which was echoed in our passage today, we must remember what Paul wrote to the Corinthians about it. And during the AGM, Leanna shared from 1 Corinthians 10, 19 to 22, which reads, "What do I imply then?" He talks about the sacrament of the wine and the bread, and he says, "What do I imply then? That food offered to idols is anything, or that an idol is anything. No, I imply that what pagan sacrifice they offer to demons and not to God. I do not want you to be participants with demons. You cannot drink of the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You cannot partake of the table of the Lord and the table of demons." I.e., there are standards of behavior for those who participate in God's communion. We can't dine and feast with God our King and dine and feast with other earthly dinner hosts. So imagine a society where your acceptance of an invitation to dinner was like a pledge that you would not go anywhere else that night. Much like today, really. It would be hugely disrespectful if you, to your inviting host, if you were to do so. You accept an invitation to the king's palace, place, and you're super excited about it, and the night is set. And as part of the invitation, as many invitations do these days, it specifies what you are to wear, how you're to present yourself. Now, let's just say, in this case, it's a white dress. So in my case, I don't own a white dress, so I would have to go out and buy one. But that would be okay, because I was having dinner with the king. But then on my way to dinner that night, on my way to the king's palace to take up my seat at the table in my new white dress, I hear the same sound of a rugby game at the pub. I happen to be walking by. And the smell of T-bone steak is wafting out the windows. And I can just tell by how it smells that it's medium rare, just how I like it. And it's got the garlic butter and the fries and the egg. Okay. And seeing me, the owner invites me in for dinner. Now, if I go in, I'm breaking society's rule of not accepting any other invitations on the night where I am pledged elsewhere. But I decide that in actual fact, the king won't know. He won't see. And as soon as I step in the door of that pub, I've shown disrespect, but the delight of the medium rare steak wins me over. But then I get some of the garlic butter on my new white dress. Guys, and I don't have time to call one of my many sisters and try and find another one. Okay, there's no way of covering the evidence. So I just hope, as I finish my steak and dash to the king's house, that it's just not visible. And my white dress is still kind of seen as white. It is yellow after all. The lining might be good. Who knows? You might get away with it. But of course, the king notices. He also notices that I'm late. Who here kind of gets a little bit edgy when people are late to dinner? Yeah. How many? Yeah. So my lateness, my dress state, it doesn't change the fact that I'm welcome. And the Bible talks about how the king actually clothes us in a robe of righteousness to cover it up. But it doesn't change the fact that he asked me to do something and I didn't do it. And see, church, as well as being loyally loving and kind and generous and abundant in hesed, as modeled by King David in our passage, our God is also holy and pure. And as we fellowship with this loving and holy God, he asks us in Leviticus 11 and in places after that. He says, "For I am the Lord your God, consecrate yourselves therefore. Be holy, for I am holy." Consecrate means set apart, be sanctified, be prepared, hallowed and blessed, i.e. set yourselves apart from the rest of the world. Purify yourselves so that your life reflects knowledge of a pure God who is unlike any other. Come to the table having sanitized, prepared and presented yourself as per his instruction and in a way that is honoring of the invitation and the host who offers it. Wear white if he asks you to. Live lives that reflect to society that you dine with God. And as a leadership, we acknowledge that it's just getting harder and harder and harder and harder to do that. And so we want to explore as a church family that this year. If the band want to come up. I didn't actually tell the other three elders this, so this will be a surprise to them. But when the morning that we were presenting at the AGM, I was getting ready, getting in the zone to present my part, and I was listening to this song by Leland, and it's called Carry to the Table. And it actually was one of the songs that led me to the story about Mephibosheth. It's essentially a song written about it. And the lyrics go, I was carried to the table, seated where I wasn't belong, where I don't belong. I was carried to the table, swept away by his love. So I was listening to the song. And then you know how Spotify does that like random thing where it just sends you songs that it thinks you might like afterwards. And so I listened to Carry to the Table, and then randomly up onto Spotify came this song called More. Never heard it before. I just want more of God's presence. I was like, oh, well, that's funny, Lord. Good on you. That's in line with the vision. And then I was like, gosh, it'd be really funny if the next one was about God's holiness. You know? And sure enough, Spotify sent me Holy One, which I'd never heard before. And I just took that as a real affirmation of that as an eldership, we just are really affirmed in where we feel we're supposed to head this year. And I hope that you have captured a sense of that this morning, of where we want to head. But the reality of it is, church, is that we're actually 6 weeks into the year already. Bruce kindly asked me how my Christmas was earlier this morning, and I was like, gosh, Christmas feels like ages ago. Shows what kind of 6 weeks I've had. And so I guess the reality of it is the year has started. And therefore, you can start today actioning these focus areas. You can start today. If you want more, you can start today. And as I've talked about God's hesed and his love and his grace and his kindness, and as I've talked about you know, being in seasons of wilderness areas, you may feel like you're in a wilderness. You may feel like you're in a wilderness. And I would encourage you today, 6 weeks into this new year, don't delay in pursuing more. Don't delay in coming down to the front and asking for a revelation of God's goodness and his grace and his hesed. Mephibosheth came and he fell on his face before this king. And he was met with a loving father, a loving king figure. And so I just really encourage you that if you want to start, if you want to move from feeling like you're in a season of wilderness and receive a revelation of God's goodness today, I would encourage you, make a move out of your seats during the worship. Feel free to come down. Imagine the king and his table are here. The wilderness is out there. Make a move. And come and fall before him and ask for a fresh revelation of who he is. So I kind of like to split it up a bit. If you would like prayer and you don't want anyone to pray for you, if you just want to do the business with the Lord, if you want to receive the revelation of him and just do some one-on-one time, come to this half. But if you would like someone to pray for you, just come to that part. You know? People like both. So, but I would encourage you. I would encourage you. Don't delay. The year has started. Make a move. Start thinking about it. Come and receive a fresh revelation of the God that we serve in the middle week of February.